Hello and welcome to the wild wormhole where, much like the card, you never know what you're gonna get. It's been a minute, but I'm back. I'm D House here with my good buddy Jay Bray.
Hello! What's up, D House?
Oh, not much. So excited to record, talk some Keyforge, you know. There's a few things that have happened recently that, you know, we could talk about, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a little quiet on the announcements, and there's nothing to really report on for upcoming events. So just kind of, you know, pretty chill Keyforge environment recently.
Yeah, and if you're sitting there thinking, oh, great, another podcast, more Keyforge media about all the formats, you're wrong. Because
not today.
We are not going to talk about the formats at all. There's been great conversations that have been had all over the place. I just don't think we would add anything of value necessarily or anything unique to the conversation. So you guys can go check out all the other good things. We're going to focus on the fact that we are about to get Winds of Exchange decks opening in like a few weeks because of a little thing called Keyforge Celebration that I'm going to, and I'm so excited. So we're going to focus on that. So
yeah, absolutely.
But before, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you sounded like either so excited that you were about to burst or like you really had to sneeze there. So I wasn't sure which one was going
on. Yeah, I did rake 1 billion leaves today. So it would not surprise me if I sneezed a few times on this cast. But alas, here we are. Before we get into the Winds of Exchange hype, we always kind of talk a little bit your week in Keyforge. I'll let you go first because I think mine's a lot more than yours.
Yeah, I played Keyforge this week, and I lost every game that I played. So that's my Keyforge claim to fame this week. And by lost every game, I meant D House and I were practicing / running some, and he kicked my tail. And punishment for losing that badly was to admit to it in front of all of you guys. So there's my truth. I lost a lot of Keyforge this week, and I don't know if I'll recover.
I thought your punishment was that you had to sit for 24 hours in a Waffle House and stay there, and you can take 1 hour off the 24-hour punishment for every waffle you ate.
Right, and to add to the punishment is I had to keep Call of Discovery podcasts on the entire time I was in the Waffle House.
Ooh, shivers. That's cruel and unusual.
I would eat 24 waffles so fast.
Yeah, so, excuse me. My week in Keyforge, yeah, prepping for Keyforge Celebration. Probably planning on doing the Archon tournament, the Archon standard, just bring a deck. And I have played 3 or 4 different decks. I don't have any, you know, absolute insane bangers that's like so obvious you would definitely take this deck. But I've got a few good ones, and you've got some good ones, and so was trying a few and practicing, so that was fun. Had some good matches online with some great people from all different places of the world who helped me test some decks, which is really cool. Also playing an ABR. ABR's kicked off this week. I'm on Team Riders of the Return with Team Captain Draskor and a bunch of content creators. It's hilarious. So we figured if we lose every round, we could just make a podcast about it and call it a day and be successful.
Honestly, if y'all did just one chaotic podcast, just all y'all talking at once about the team, I don't know if it'd be good, but it would be fun.
It would be recorded. It would be content.
It would be content.
welcome to the wormhole. Yeah, so it's a great little team. This week was SAS ladder, so every member of the team had to have like a different SAS range. So I ended up on 68 through 70 and ended up playing this Mass Mutation deck that I may have played once, honestly. and I kind of threw out some to the team and let them vote on like, which one do you think I should play? Because I prefer to play my own, even though I could play someone else's. I just like playing my own decks. And they voted for that one, and right before the match, I wanted to practice, but I just ran out of time, and so I threw one game in of practice before my actual round, and it was just awful. Like, it was I recognized, crap, I do not have enough creature control. I've got a lot of amber control, but if I don't have a board, it's really hard. And so I immediately regretted it and then walked into my round. I was like, crap, I don't know what I'm going to do. And then I pull up my opponent's deck. I'm playing against K March. And K March is running a deck with 28 creatures and a Forge Compiler. And immediately I'm like, oh, shoot. I'm like, this is going to be a bloodbath. Because I've got one board wipe in my whole deck, Spirit's Way. And so it's just like, I just have to play. It has to go off the perfect turn, and I might have a chance. And K-March burst it up, I think. Had a key and four amber. I had no keys, no amber. But I had a great... I was just archiving like crazy with autoencoder. And finally dug into the Spirit's Way. Was able to Spirit's Way before Forge Compiler. And then drop five Sanctum creatures and start getting a bunch of amber. And any creatures that K-March played, I was able to kill and kind of control the board that way and clawed my way back. Eventually, I had like a safe house and Bone Nithing, Radpenny going, and I was just able to sneak out the win. It was crazy. It was one of my favorite games I've ever played in Keyforge, for sure.
That's sweet. It is always fun, like, when you're paired up in something that you know is about the same level as yours. It's just like, you just get those stories from it. It's not just this like awkward blowout, which it sounds like it could have been had Forge Compiler gotten out there, but thank goodness.
Oh yeah, definitely. So Forge Compiler is really like getting up in my own personal rankings of cards I'm loving. I played in the Fire Sale Frenzy on Archon's Corner as well. This happened a while ago. This wasn't this week, but I did make top eight in that draft, that 40-person draft, 90 SAS decks. And Forge Compiler was like an MVP card for like the whole tournament.
Cool. I mean, yeah, you look at that, it's like you don't get an amber pip. It's dependent on your opponent forging a key, so that never feels good. But it's just, yeah, you get that board and you can kind of take off from there. But yeah, it's just you need it early for it to do anything.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So anyways, yeah, so cool. I've been playing a lot, but honestly I'm like, I'm at that point now where I'm like, I can keep playing these decks, but man, I just want my Unchained decks. I want my Winds of Exchange decks. I am ready for what is about to happen in a few weeks at Keyforge Celebration. So if you've been living under a rock, Ghost Galaxy was able to put together a huge in-person Keyforge weekend up in Minnesota at the Game Center. I am shocked they were able to put it together so quickly. Nobody expected anything until 2023. Definitely not before, you know, we all got our boxes of GameFound pledges. And so the fact that they were able to pull this off, I am so glad and fortunate to be able to go. I think a lot of it had to do with my birthday being like a week and a half before that and pulling some strings, if you know what I mean. Thanks, wife. And unfortunately, you don't get to go. Boo.
I know. The dreaded work.
Yeah.
But it's all good. It's all good. You'll represent us well, I'm certain, or else.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about define well.
So here's the deal. If you're in a tournament and it looks like you're like maybe a game or two away from potentially making top cut, you know what you have to do, right?
Heart of the Cards?
Drop for B-dubs.
Yeah, that's right.
It's the wormhole way.
That is the wormhole way. Which was that Vault Tour Richmond that you dropped at 3-1?
No, it was, oh shoot, what was that event?
Oh, it was Nationals. It was LA. Yeah, it was Nationals. Yeah.
Yeah. The sweet boneless wings were just calling me. That should tell you how bad of a headset I was in, as I was wanting boneless wings that day rather than bone in wings. So,
well, to be fair, we did talk about this offline, but that was sealed triad, right, for AOA?
Yeah, you got to you had three decks, you saw their houses, you got to ban one of your opponent's decks, and then it was best two out of three with the two decks each.
Yeah so sealed triad sort of. So best of three for all of Swiss. I mean, you were just exhausted by the end of it and hungry. and you knew it was going late. And so now with Ghost Galaxy, I said I wasn't going to talk about formats, but basically Ghost Galaxy, all their formats are like the early rounds, the double elimination, formerly Swiss, are all single game. None of them are three games until you get in the top cut, which is such a relief, honestly, because I do think that is so much of a grind.
Yeah, it can't. I mean, the best of three, you feel like you have a little bit more agency as far as like potentially like, okay, well, they won two games out of three on me. They probably were the better player or deck. But I agree with you. I think the best of three just goes way too long for those early rounds where it's like, you know, it's just not, it's not beneficial, I don't think.
Yeah.
So, but like you said, that's all we'll need to talk about that, because we have so many things to talk about on this podcast.
Yes.
Like 21 of them to be exact.
Yes. Okay, so here's what we're going to do for this episode. Again, everyone's talking formats. Nobody's talking about cards. We're going to talk about cards. And
the best card.
We're going to talk about these token creatures coming in Winds of Exchange. And we've decided there's 21 of them that have been spoiled out of 28. So there's still seven we haven't seen. But we're going to do an absolutely way too early, premature ranking of all 21 token creatures.
Yep.
Absolute chaos.
I was gonna say, if King Potato has taught us anything, our guesses will be so wrong.
Well, your guesses will be wrong. Mine will be correct. We'll come back to this in like a few months and be like, who is right? So let me throw out the necessary disclaimer. We know this is too soon. None of these can actually be judged in a vacuum because of the way that KeyForge is. You know, we could say, hey, there's a bottom five token creature on our list, but it ends up being the best Winds of Exchange deck in the world because of the way that the cards are combined and the algorithm and everything. So so we know this is going to be very imperfect, but we're just doing this for the sake of discussion and fun, and let's talk about cards again, not just tournament formats. So so how we're gonna do this is we're gonna alternate picks, and we're gonna end with like, this is sort of the wild wormhole ranking. We're definitely gonna disagree about things, but whoever's pick it is ultimately gets to make the final decision. So if it's thrown in the ranks, then we just have to go with it, and there we go. So so that's how we're gonna do it, and we'll see what happens. So I'll publish this list somewhere. I don't know where or how once this this podcast goes live, because obviously this is audio format, but I'll try to do a good job of like describing in the ranking. So all right,
I love it. And just as last disclaimer, I will be basing my decisions off the vibe that I get when I look off the card, so that should be pretty telling.
Yeah. We have, like, what, 100 cards completely revealed in Dark Tidings, Winds of Exchange? So,
103 currently.
So, and I don't even know how many cards. There's probably, what, 400 cards in a set?
That sounds right.
So anyways, I'm just, we're just gonna roll with it. I'm gonna stop making disclaimers. Let's hit 21. Are you going first or am I going first?
Oh, I'm feeling risky. I'll go.
Okay, great. What's the worst token creature?
Oh, it's so obvious. So the worst token creature of the set, is a special little sanctum token called the Disciple. This sanctum creature has 3 power, 2 armor, and you're like, wait, that sounds so good for a token.
Doesn't sound bad. Yeah.
With the caveat, cannot be used unless it has a non-monk neighbor.
No, not unless, if it has a non-monk neighbor.
Let me check that again.
Yeah, you said Disciple cannot be used unless it has a non-monk neighbor. Yeah.
Right, sorry. Unless it has a monk neighbor. I read that weird.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. This card, what is it good for? What's he doing?
Absolutely nothing. So this is the special rarity one for Baterial of the Gray, which is a 3 power, 2 armor creature. It's a human monk, and that has a reap effect. Ready Each Disciple. So, you know, in magical Merry Christmas land at the North Pole, yeah, you've got a bunch of these disciples out, and you know, you get this in and somehow ready it and reap after you've already reaped and you burst up, maybe, but this just looks terrible. Like, because, you know, other houses are going to create these tokens, and if you don't have a monk, it's not even sanctum, it's just monk.
Yep.
Which feels way too limiting. So I don't know.
I think, like you said, in like Happy Magic Land, I mean, so Betrayal of the Grey comes down, I just kill that card. I don't worry about killing off all these disciples that might ready again and, you know, pop off. It's just kill Betrayal, knock it out of the way, it's done, don't have to worry about it anymore. And then, yeah, you just get to go crazy with it. I did realize the way that I read that was incredibly wrong because, yeah, if Disciple's out by itself, you can use it. But then if it's got one neighbor that's not a monk, then you can't use it. So it's either side.
Yeah.
So the way I read it was for sure wrong.
Yeah. So
even more so, more text just to make it worse.
Yeah. And even just like the Sanctum creatures we've seen revealed, like Serial the Steadfast, Spirit Knight, Zephon the Opulent, he's a human. The Grey Rider is actually a monk. That's surprising.
Yep.
But it just, golly, that's a hard restriction. So not a fan of this. But we'll see. I don't know. Maybe in a double Betrayal of the Grey deck somehow. But it's again, that is number.
Yeah.
So that is number 21. Moving on to number 20. I'm conflicted. I've got a few options, and I just thought of another one. but I think I'm gonna go. I'm going to go with Grunt.
Wow.
I'm going to go with Grunt. And I love Mars, but... yeah, I just can't. I think Grunt is just a 3-power Mars token.
That's it.
So it's fine. I mean, yeah. I mean, it can reap and fight, and it just doesn't have anything, like, too amazing. So it just doesn't give you options, whereas, like, at least some of the other ones out there give you options or like something your opponent has to answer. Whereas if you see Grunt out there, you're not too worried unless they reprint like Hypnotic Command or Psychic Network or something.
So. Yeah. Unless there's like somehow like greater than 3-power synergy in Mars, which is just not their, like what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's so just generic. It's a little Martian soldier. I will say the Grunt is like the Mars like image is like what I think of when I look at Grunt. But yeah, I agree. It's just boring. It chills there. That's probably not what I would have picked for 20 spicy, but it's way down here for me. I completely agree with that.
Okay, so you're not fighting it.
I'm not going to fight it. I'm totally okay with it. There's a lot that are kind of those like generic whatevers, but yeah, just 3-power, that's it. I don't want it.
Yeah, I wrestled between Grunt or Knight, because Knight's a 2-power, 1-armor sanctum that's so it's basically the same in stats, but the 1-armor, you know, might...
Well, Knight's my number 3 out of 21, so we'll have to fight about that one later. But...
yeah, sure. all right, you got 19.
Cool, well... Let's see here. I can see where you're thinking, Knight, for 2-power, 1-armor.
Boring.
But I'm going to take a different route.
Okay.
Because why be lame when we can be fun?
What you got for
me? And I'm going to go with the Bellatorin Warriors.
Whoa, no. How is that worse than Knight?
How is that worse than Knight?
Yeah.
It's just generic stats. That's all it's doing.
But Knight is 2-power, 1-armor. Bellatorin is 5-power, 2-armor.
Right, but the only way you get Bellatorin Warrior is with training costs.
All right, read training costs.
So training costs says it's an action. I can't wait to fight about this one with you. You cannot choose to discard training costs from your hand. Play, lose two amber if you do not shuffle training costs into your deck.
Yeah, big whoop.
Okay, so this is acting as a chain in your hand for several turns, just so you can get some big creatures out there that don't do a whole lot else?
No, it's not going to be a chain. You're just going to play it. You're just going to play it and lose two. And then if you don't, if you only have zero or one, you know, you shuffle it back in. Yeah, you could draw back into it, but it's a rare. There's archiving in this game. You know, there's, you know, I think this 5-power 2-armor guy is going to be, you know, especially with like exalting that Sarian likes to do, capturing. We haven't seen a lot of like board wipes yet. I could be wrong. They could be coming. But having a 5-power guy with 2 armor, like, that's very strong. I'm shocked. I would never put this worse than Knight.
You might be convincing me, and I'm sad to say it. I did just the gut. Oh man, there's a cost, training cost, to playing this guy.
Cause like, even but with that card, you would rather, if you
be a Bellatorn Warrior.
If you open a Winds Exchange deck and you had Sarian and Sanctum, you can't tell me that you would rather see Knight than Bellatorn Warrior.
Oh, I want to see Bellatorn Warrior just because I think it's fun. But I'm just thinking, trying to play around, like, sure, you can play around training costs in the sense of archiving it away or that turning into a token creature. Like, yeah, there's ways that can turn out pretty okay for you. But it still is just not a good effect, but... I guess I don't like giving just raw stats much credit, but that is a big enough creature to actually be able to take out things like Eddie, like 4x4s, like, and be able to like stick around and do a lot of work.
Yeah, so, 2 armor's right. Not nothing.
I just didn't want to say Knight all willy-nilly over here at 19 because you said Knight and then give you the 18th pick. But get the Bellatorn Warrior out of here.
Yes.
Knight's going away. You're right.
We did it, guys. We did it.
Ugh, I feel gross, but you're right.
I'm so excited. So are you good with Knight?
So Knight is the easy number 19 call here. I don't know why you were thinking the Bellatorn Warriors. That was just silly. but yeah, 2 power, 1 armor. That's not going to do a whole lot for you. Yeah, there's just too many better things that can happen, and like, really, you're gonna block one little damage each turn? That's not gonna help you out, so get it out of here.
Yep. Okay.
I can't even believe we had to fight over that.
All right, well, since that was your pick, obviously at 19, I get number 18. At number 18, I am going to choose, looking at the available token creatures, I am going to choose it's one of the unfathomable ones. It's either Cultist or Priest. Which I love unfathomable, so this hurts, but it just does not seem powerful enough. I'm going to say Priest.
Wow.
Okay, so Priest is 2 power, no armor, action, exhaust an enemy creature. So you can exhaust Priest to exhaust an enemy creature, which is fine. But it does not necessarily, like, advance your win condition. It's, like, pseudo-creature control. Like, if you were playing against a Coda deck and there's a Witch of the Eye that came down, it's like you couldn't kill it with Priest, so like, oh shoot, I better exhaust the Witch of the Eye and draw into something else to actually take care of this thing. But I mean, it's like, I don't know. It's going to be pretty rare that exhausting one creature is the difference in a game. I'm saying Priest. What do you think?
Ooh, I want to disagree with you, but the fact that it's an action does make it tough because you're losing your ability to do anything with that card. There are a lot of, you know, there is a ton of synergy with exhausted creatures within Unfathomable. I feel like that's a deck that if there's, you can get three or four priests out, it actually does turn pretty good, but it probably would be tough to pull that off.
Now, if they, you know, there are cards in Unfathomable, like Call of the Void, you know, it's a card in Dark Tidings. When you play it, you know, let me read it exactly so I don't butcher it. Let me look it up. You get an amber for playing it. Play, exhaust the creature. If it was already exhausted, destroy it instead, and its controller loses one. And it is a common. So if Call of the Void is reprinted, I see priest value going up in that deck. Because then it's like, oh, you know, you're actually destroying it and making your opponent lose an amber because it's exhausted. But so we'll see. This could change after we see the rest of Unfathomable, but right now I'm not feeling it.
Sure. I mean, it so Sleep with the Fishes has been announced for this set, which is play, destroy each exhausted creature. It's uncommon. So there's definitely going to be synergy with Priest, but it's going to require the Unfathomable House to complement it well. So, yeah, we'll find a deck or two that will do really well against it. But I think a lot of times, yeah, like you said, it's kind of like, well, wouldn't I rather just kind of have an Amber rather than trying to guess what they're wanting to do on their next turn kind of idea. So I think I can be okay with that.
All right, that's Priest at number 18. You got number 17.
All right. So I would have flipped these two. I think Priest may have been even a little bit higher for me, but I'm not going to fight you too hard. But man, does cultists seem tough to pull off.
Yeah. Are you pulling for cultists? Should we read this?
Oh yeah. Well, I'll read cultist. So cultist is a 2-power unfathomable token creature, and it says action: destroy 5 cultists. If you do, search your deck and discard pile for Tangaika, play it and ward it, and then shuffle your deck. So you're having to have 5 of these token creatures out, one of them ready, to then utilize the action to then get to play Tangaika from your deck or discard pile. And that card is 25 power creature with 2 amber pips. It says cannot be played from your hand. Splash attack 5. So whatever creature you attack, it will deal 5 damage to its neighbors. And then it says fight, gain an amber. So that card's sweet if you could actually play it normally. But it seems like the only way you can play it normally would be with cultist. Now, of course, there might be a card like Jargoggle or something like that in the set where you might be able to cheat this out another way. But as far as like the way it's designed, 5 token creatures all eliminated. So it's like you're losing out on 5 creatures that could have just reaped for 5 anyway. And this card's taking up a slot in your deck. Like, that just sounds crazy to me.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but I do agree with you.
I want it to be cool.
I do. The only reason I put Priest below it is because if you do, like, if you're playing a deck with Cultist and you are able to spam tokens, like, you just have one of those decks that spams token creatures, and then all of a sudden you got a bunch of Cultists out there, and your opponent's like, oh, crap, oh, gosh, Tank Gank is coming, and it's going to be warded, and it's going to kill my board, and it, like, at least plays a little bit of, like, mind games with your opponent, like, oh, am I gonna reap 5 times, or am I gonna, you know, do this thing, reap 4 times, and you know, pull this off, or whatever? I don't know. I do hope there's another way to play Tangaika so that it's not just Infernus bait in my discard pile. But there's no disc in this set, so no Exhum. There's no Logos in this set, so no Jargoggle. So we'll see.
Yeah, and I just think the fact that it is just like a generic creature outside of that, like, makes it way better than Grunt could ever be. Just like, you just have an additional option of, well, if there is a scary creature out there, you can just exhaust it. But from there, you could, you know, fight, reap, all of the other things. So it's not limited to just exhausting. So I, it does just, the priest it is. Or sorry. Yeah, priest. But I don't know. Yeah, cultist is just interesting to me. I just, that seems like way too, like, sneaky of a play just to get a creature out there.
Yeah.
So, there we go.
All right, so we let me recap the bottom five. Number 21 is Disciple. Number 20 is Grunt. 19 is Knight. 18 is Priest, and 17 is Cultist. So it is my turn at number 16, and it's getting tougher. It's getting tougher.
It's starting. Yeah.
Yeah, I am. I'm between three cards from three different houses right now.
Whoa.
I think I'm going to go with... I'm going to fight for Cadet at number 16.
Okay.
Cadet is a Star Alliance token creature, has a measly one power. With a destroyed effect that says ward Cadet's most powerful neighbor. So obviously ward is powerful. Like we were just talking about Forge Compiler, like ward is a good thing. But at one power, you know, you're not exactly going to throw Cadet into something to kill it, to then get the bonus of warding. It feels like Cadet's going to get picked off by some throwing stars or some seeker needles, and the ward won't be massive. I mean, it could be good. I mean, obviously, like, you know, if Val Jericho is reprinted and Val Jericho has a Cadet that, you know, is, gets a nice little ward, that's cool, but I don't know. I don't think I'll be very excited to see a one power creature that has this destroyed effect. If it was two power, I would be a little bit more interested, but one seems a little more insignificant. So I'm fighting for Cadet at number 16.
Oh, David. no, I'm totally cool with that. Yeah, just everything you said. I agree. I think a ward is cool, but it may not even help you at all. And just as a one power dude, it's not good. So I think, again, the reason I like it better than like Grunt with just three is because it does actually have extra text that could be good. But more often than not, it's just going to be like a little dude that doesn't do a whole lot. So,
yeah. All right.
I agree.
Easy.
I'm fine with it.
All right. Cool. Number 15.
Cool. Let's see here. 15. Let's ruffle some feathers again.
Oh, gosh. Here we go.
Honestly, this one should have been way lower, in my opinion.
Here we go. I know what you're doing.
I just forgot about it.
I know what you're about to say.
It's Blorb.
It
has to be Blorb. Are you kidding me? Blorb is a one-power creature that cannot reap. Let me say that again. A one-power creature that cannot reap. It's terrible.
But have you seen the art?
The art is so cute. Pulling that little worm out of the ground. But it does have an additional effect where it says destroyed, return Blorb Hive from your discard pile to your hand. And Blorb Hive says destroy a friendly creature. If you do, make two Blorbs. Then, if you control 10 or more Blorbs, you can destroy Blorb Hive and forge a key at no cost.
Wait, how much does that key cost?
At no cost.
No
There's
cost.
No key cost to the cost.
Well, so, hey, we know how much Epic Quest took over the meta, so...
Yep. So, theoretically, you could win the game in three turns. Because Blorb Hive has to come in, be ready, and then kill it. But it has an Omni effect, so you can do this on whatever turn. It doesn't have to be on a Mars turn.
Yep. And you never know. You destroy a friendly creature. Sometimes that's helpful. Like if it has a good destroyed effect.
I want a Blorbhive deck that works to be good so badly, don't get me wrong. But it is a token creature that cannot reap.
Yeah. Like,
I don't see any way this card's good. I think this card probably should have been 20 or 21. but here we are, all the way at 15, because it is adorable as can be. And the upside is you just win the game.
All right, well, I'm not gonna fight you on it. I think you're probably right. I think Blorb is probably more for the memes than the dreams. So I think you're probably right, but I would love to be proven wrong. I would love to get a couple months from now and force you to issue an official retraction on the podcast. Yeah. How much you underestimated the Blorb meta coming.
I agree with you. Every part of me wanted this to, you know, go to the moon, all the way to number one. But alas, it's probably 20th.
You're probably right. So yeah. Looking at it live, yeah, we probably could have put Blorb a little bit lower, but
it's too late now.
Yeah. It's too late. All right, moving on to number 14. This is my turn. I think I'm looking at the ones that are still available. And there's some
there's a few myth.
Yeah, pretty underwhelming effects. I think it's going to be either a Sanctum card.
Whoa.
Or a Saurian card.
Hey.
I think I'm going to go... It's between Squire and Politician for me, and I can't decide.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm going to let you influence my decision here between Squire and Politician.
As in you want me to push you one direction?
Yeah, push me.
Cool. Let's just push you towards the Faceless Wonders.
What?
Oh, wait. Squire does have a face. That's unfortunate.
It's like, what are you saying?
A lot of the knights have their hoods on or like their helmets on, so you don't actually see their face. And I'm looking at Squire, and it's plain as can be.
Okay.
I was just wrong.
All right, so Squire is a 2-power Sanctum token that has Taunt.
That's it.
Yeah, Taunt is not nothing. Obviously, we know. If you're spamming a bunch of Taunt guys out and you're capturing a bunch of Amber or you have some powerful effects, like which of the eye type effects, it could be fine. But 2-power is pretty low. This is like a Cement Shoes, Relentless Whisper, Nerve Blast away from just being gone. So
that is correct.
I just think it's gonna be a little bit of a underwhelming token. Not the worst. Obviously, it's at 14, not 21. It's in the top 66%.
That's pretty good.
But yeah, that's my vote, Squire.
Nope, I like it. I think I would have probably picked Squire over the Politician as well. So that's great.
Man, I just need to note that on our list we have we've got a lot of Sanctum very low.
It's true. I it's just because it's just the generic tokens. I mean, it's their they don't do a lot, or they have serious down effects or negative effects that it's just like it's tough to get excited about them. I will say, like, there is probably some good playability into just getting to keep spamming those taunts. Like, you have to be able to fight into it as well as, you know, kill the target creature. So they're annoying, but I mean, nothing special.
Yeah.
So I think that is a totally fine call.
All right. You got number 13.
Number 13. Let's see here. I'm going to go with... Bum, bum, bum. Man, this is getting a little tricky now. Again, it's like, do I just want to make that call because you just said it, or carry on, or go back to a different one?
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, Amber Control and, like, Key Cost Tax, I mean, even just needing a single turn and just pushing that key up one, you know, just one is all you need. And so you got this measly little politician. So I tend to put more hope in the Amber Control there. But
I'm actually going to just complete the list here. I'm going to put Cleric down.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Why not?
Okay, yeah, read the card.
After Cleric enters play, capture one Amber. It has one power. So it's captured Amber.
Okay, wait, sorry. Does the captured Amber go on Cleric?
I believe so.
Okay, Raiding Knight from Coda says play capture one. This says after Cleric enters play, capture one. So I feel like you could put the Amber anywhere.
I disagree because of the way you just read that. It didn't say this creature captures one. It just says capture one, and that's the creature that captured it.
Because Raiding Knight always captures the Amber.
Right. Therefore, I think Cleric would also capture the Amber. Mm. But like the capture pips, like the bonus pips or whatever, that's different because it takes effect before it's, you know, the play abilities and everything triggered, so it can go anywhere. But I think this one is Cleric is the thing that captures it.
See that would change my opinion. If it was that the Amber goes on Cleric, then I might agree with you. If it goes anywhere you want, then I'm like, oh, I don't that. Then I'm like, it's better. But if it's what you're saying, rules wise,
I'm pretty sure that's correct. Is that which I mean? Somebody definitely tell us wrong if that's not the case. But
okay.
Because none of the other ones that say capture an Amber say this creature captures an Amber. It just says capture. That leads me to believe that Cleric is the thing that captures it. Mm. Now, the thing that's nice about it is you just make a token creature and you pull them off check. That part's great compared to the politician. But I just feel like the politician has a little bit more upside. Where the Cleric is just, again, it's just that like little, like one damage is all it takes to pop that thing. So I don't know. I think it's good still. Like I would be happy with the Cleric deck. That's good Amber control. You don't have to have any other Amber control in that deck to feel like you can have plays just because every house now has Amber control. So I think it's a good card, but I think there's other cards that are just better right now.
Mm.
So I mean, as I'm sitting there talking, the fact that you do get Amber control in every house.
Yeah.
Make me like the card for sure, and I hope I'm wrong on that, but yeah, that's where I'm at with it.
Yeah, I'm not sold, but I'm not passionate enough to fight it, so we're gonna let it go through. Cause I feel like there are some turns where there's like that unfathomable guy that makes three token creatures. I'm trying to find a what am I thinking of? Guilt Spine School, 1 power, 5 armor, Ogwin creature. Says play, make 3 token creatures. Token creatures do not ready during their controller's ready card step. Which that's a super terrible, you know, back, you know, underwhelming. But if you have, you know, the Cleric, it's like, oh, you play and then you capture 3 amber, and you force your opponent to answer. It's like a weird old Bruno kind of. Or a charrette kind of thing, but
yeah, I we can definitely think through a couple of them, see if we want to move them up or down at the end.
Well,
of it.
Yeah, maybe at the end of this we'll look and we can do some final edits if we want to. Okay, so since you put Cleric there, I'm gonna go ahead and put Politician up next.
I love it.
So Politician is a two power Saurian token. Dinosaur Politician has an action header. Keys cost plus one during your opponent's next turn. So, not great. Very situational. It's not a reap effect. You got to exhaust to make that plus one. So, how much you're going to use this, I don't know. We'll see what kind of scaling Amber Control we have in this set, too. If you're trying to get them to go higher, so you're trying to stop that Forge at six and push it to seven. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I could see a deck that has, like, that spams out these Saurian guys that can boost it up to, like, nine. And it's just, like, obnoxious and forcing you to, like, what are you going to do? Are you going to, like, take care of these guys or what? But, yeah, I'm just throwing Politician in there.
Number 12. Yeah, it's with how slow it is that it has to be on a Saurian turn that makes it tricky with the Politician. It's just like forcing the keys to go higher, I think, is great, especially if you can make them forge at 11 kind of idea. Like, I think that's when it's at its peak, is like they still were able to forge, but they had to spend so many resources to that they're just way behind the rest of the game now.
Yep.
So I love the card. I think it's good. I think, you know, that Amber Control in Saurian is always successful, but probably just a little too slow, but it's still an okay card.
Yeah. All right, let's review. We have our bottom 10 now. So at number 21, we have Disciple. At number 20, we have Grunt. Number 19, we've got Knight. Number 18, we have Priest. Number 17, we have Cultist. RIP Unfathomable. At 16, we have Cadet. 15, Blorb. 14, Squire. 13, Cleric. 12, Politician. So now we are into our next 11. We are right at the 50% mark. So hopefully we start to see some tokens get real good.
I have a good one that I want to say for right splitting down the middle.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to go with the Goblin out of Brobnar.
Okay.
So Goblin is a two-power creature, and it has Skirmish. And I think it's a good spot for him. I think as far as what Brobnar's wanting to do, they're wanting to fight, they're wanting to deal damage and, you know, work around damaged creatures. And Skirmish is good. I mean, as far as the fight capabilities, you know, it's exactly what you're wanting on a creature. But the fact that, you know, again, you're having to call Brobnar to be able to use its ability, it's still slow, but I like what it can do. I feel like when all is said and done, the ones that do a little bit more Amber Control might be a little bit more powerful, but I want to hold out hope that Brobnar is the bee's knees this set, and that all you're wanting to do is fight your creatures into each other. So not super likely, but hey, I'm here for it, and I hope the Goblin gets us there.
Yep. And then I think we also have, because of the few cards we do have spoiled, we know about a little guy named Brick Nasty. Five power creep Brobnar creature says, after another friendly Brobnar creature fights, gain one. And it's a common. So a little token at two power with Skirmish. Normally fighting with two power, it's like, oh, big deal. But if you're getting an amber when you fight it instead of reaping, it's like you can do two damage and get one. That's not bad at all. So I think that's an apt placement for Goblin. And
if they was to give me a four times Brick Nasty deck with Goblin, I'm here for it.
There we go. All right. So now we're in the top 10.
Top 10.
Now we're in the top 10. Okay. I need to update our little cheat sheet. We have not named a single Equidon token, if that tells you anything.
We might have an affinity towards one of the houses.
I think... I think I'm going to say Rebel. Rebel is a Mars token with one power and a reap effect. Deal one to a creature.
Cool.
So again, with a lot of these tokens coming in at one power, I think that deal one to a creature will actually be important at times. So to be able to reap and deal one, either knock off a ward or actually like potentially kill a creature, or maybe you've got some cleansing wave shenanigans in Sanctum. I don't know. I think Rebel will be interesting to have out there. And it is a Rebel, and we have seen a little bit of Rebel subtype language. I'm trying to remember. It's the, Yixel, the Iron Captain. It's 4 power, 1 armor creature. Says play each friendly Rebel creature captures 2. So there's some cool synergy there for that to just capture 2. It's only one, only 1 power. So, not crazy, but we're in the top 10, so I think it's fine. It's not crazy, but it's okay.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, it's nice that you're like gaining an amber and killing off somebody's blorb because you're trying to make the hive complete, and you're just like, no, not today. So I can't wait for hearing in a competitive format, I rebel your blorb for one. So that's going to be sweet.
So good.
I like it.
All right, number 9.
Number 9 is the Rebel.
No, number 10 is the Rebel. What's number 9?
Sorry. Yeah. Number 9. I'm going to go with a similar idea and say Explorer down in Star Alliance. So Explorer says it's 2 power creature. It says reap, look at the top card of your deck, you may discard it. So I love cycle, don't get me wrong. I think it's great. I think the ability to see what's coming on top and know what you're going to draw into is fantastic. I just think it's probably too slow to be able to work really well. And so also too, like, even if you're like, man, I can cycle through my deck so fast, it's like, yeah, you can, keep discarding so you can shuffle your cards back in, but I think that's probably like the peak of what this card can do, because the moment you see the card that you want on top, you kind of stop this whole Explorer train that you got going on. But again, I think the fact that you're banking on having a ton of these tokens out, again, maybe the set just goes crazy with the amount of tokens you make. I just feel like we probably need to like temper expectations a little bit. So yeah, you'd have to have like 2 or 3 of these out to then be able to cycle to a card you want. It'll be really good at the end game when you're needing to get to that one card to like stay alive kind of thing. But it's just a lot of work, I think, for potentially no real benefit.
Yep. I think, it's also helpful for if you have cards that can make tokens, to look at what card is next to see if you want to turn that into a token.
Or that's a good point.
You could be like, okay, well, I'm going to make the token, so I'm going to discard it so that I cycle to it faster than if it comes out as a token or whatever. I don't know. If you're about to cycle or something. So it could be helpful before you make a token to decide what you want to do.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. I think that's a good upside and probably why it's in the top 10 here. I do like that effect quite a bit. I just think in comparison to what some of the others are doing, probably is going to feel underwhelming more often than not.
Yep.
So, there we go. Little Explorer.
Okay. All right. Number 8. Ooh, we are getting into some territory here. It's getting a little tougher to decide. Yep. Well, I'm between the Bellatorn Warrior and Berserker.
Wow.
I
mean, you're not even considering Equidon here.
No, I am not. I don't know which one. I actually like both of them.
I have a clear one that I think is worse, but
I think I'm going with the Bellator and Warrior. I'm glad I got it from number 20 all the way to number 8 with you somehow. Yeah.
You made good points, but the lose 2 is pretty rough.
It is not great. And I think Berserker coming into play ready and enraged on a Brobnar turn is a nice little, oh shoot, kill the witch kind of a play. Yeah.
We're going to have out.
I actually do like the Bellator Warrior. I think a 5-power 2-armor creature is interesting, but I think it just sits at number 8 for me.
Yeah, I think that's one of the few times where raw stats is actually beneficial just for how big it is, because so many creatures at 5-power or less are just doing good things, so you can just kill them. Or just reap with it if, you know.
Yeah, store Amber on it. It's like, if you really want to kill this, you're going to have to work real hard.
But I do think we need to punish it some for the training cost. Because, I mean, again, the turn you draw it, even if you play it, it still was a chain for that turn. As well as, you know, you're taking a penalty for it. Since it doesn't do anything else outside of just lose you, Amber. But I know the first card that I'm purging, if I ever get that opportunity.
There you go.
I'm hopeful that that card... You know, you can make some cool warrior decks and, you know, go full on Saurians on them, but I like it.
All right. Cool. So the last 5 have been number 12 is Politician, number 11 is Goblin, number 10 is Rebel, number 9 Explorer, number 8 Bellatorin Warrior. Off to number 7.
Mm-hmm. Cool. You're going to hate this. You're going to hate it so much.
Okay.
Because we spoiled this card.
Oh, I do hate it.
I know, but it has to be done. I'm going number 7, Strange Shell. And Strange Shell is a 1-power. How much armor does this thing have?
4!
4 armor. 1-power, 4 armor card that says cannot fight or reap, which you're just like, oh, that's bad. But it says action. Put Strange Shell into your hand. Which is cool, because Strange Shell is going to be a card underneath it to be a Strange Shell. So you get that card into your hand. It also is paired with a lovely rare creature called the Mollusk Caller, which is a 4-power creature, 4 armor. That says reap for the remainder of the turn. Each friendly Strange Shell gets +3 power and loses all abilities. So... if you're able to get Maul's Caller out there, you can, reap and then actually fight or reap with all of your Strange Shells, which is awesome. But that part's not the part that you can really rely on, since they can just kill the Maul's Caller. The action ability is still really cool, which I think is worthwhile. But I do think there's enough drawbacks here that I have to keep it at 7.
I hate it, but I agree with you. I really do. Because, again, there will be times where a Strange Shell is just sitting there collecting dust because you don't actually want it in your hand. So maybe we have a little bit of bias. It could have been a little lower, but...
It does have crazy upside. Because if you have a deck that can just make a ton of tokens, you could theoretically thin out your deck that way.
Yeah.
Because who really wants to kill these Strange Shells? They don't do anything on the board. You just kill that Mollusk Caller every now and then if it even shows up. But, you know, being able to cycle through your deck, bring up the cards that you actually want in there. If games can go long enough, theoretically you could keep, you know, the best 10 cards of your deck, you know, cycling through. So the combo potential is there, but I just think there's so much setup and so much weirdness and just the fact that at the end of the day, these cards can kind of just sit there. I don't know. It's good. I'm going to be very excited for somebody to figure out ways to combo it well to thin out their deck like that. or pull back that combo piece that they need. You know, it'll be sweet. There'll be some great plays with it. I just don't know if it can be consistent enough to rely on that.
Yep, I agree.
Cool.
All right, number six. I'm going with Berserker.
Yeah, I like it.
Again, Berserker is a 5-power Brobnar token, enters play ready and enraged, but it does have a fight effect, Destroy Berserker. There's obviously a downside here because it's enraged, and then when you fight, you have to destroy it. But because it enters play ready on a Brobnar turn, if the algorithm is favoring the house that has the most token creation in it, I think Berserker is not nothing. Again, with Brick Nasty, you're getting Amber for it, and 5-power is very strong against most creatures that you need to kill. So it also does come in with the Revna Star Song. 7-power, each friendly Berserker loses all fight effects. Special rarity connection there. So if that's in, great. You know, if it's not, that's fine too. But I think it's a nice little 5-power kill spell.
Yeah, I mean, what are they doing? These designers allowing a 7-power creature to have upside? That's insanity.
Hey, have you watched Amber Meaty's how they made Worlds Collide Brobnar video yet?
No.
I'm gonna send it to you after this. It is so funny, and he basically just does this whole like parody skit of like what happened behind the scenes to make Worlds Collide Brobnar so bad, and it's hilarious.
I can't wait for that.
So I think you'll enjoy it. Also, Amber Meaty is my roommate at Keyforge Celebration, so shout out to my future roomie. But all right, number five.
Sweet. I think that was a good pick there. I like Berserker there.
So just to review, we've got 3 tokens from Equidon, 1 from Mars, and 1 from Star Alliance left for our top 5.
Top 5
golden rings.
Man, I'm just so curious where you're thinking with this, because there's a couple that I think you're probably higher on than I am.
I wonder if we'll have to fight about this.
Probably so. Number 5, I don't think so. I think you'll be fine with my number 5. And I think this might actually be too high for this one. I'm going to go Scout. I think it's, or not, is it Scout?
Prospector.
Yeah. Prospector. One of the cards it says Scout.
So yeah, So this was released as Scout, and then someone made the comment like there is a Scout card in Keyforge already. It's that untamed thing at like, makes a guy ready and have skirmish or something. I honestly don't even remember what it does, but so they are renaming it into Prospector.
Amazing. Prospector then at number 5. It's a 1-power Equidon creature. Destroyed, draw a card. I think this is a good spot for Scout because the draw effect could be your house or could not be your house. So, I mean, sometimes it's just refilling your hand a little bit early. But if you know what your deck is looking like, or you're able to thin it out, or you're needing to just kind of cycle quickly, you know, you could potentially draw into something you really need. But it is fairly situational where it's beneficial, I guess. But it's still a good card. I mean, draw effects are always good. It's kind of like while you're drawing on your own turn, sometimes it kind of ends up being, that didn't turn into anything.
Yeah, I do not like this pick.
Cool.
I feel like Prospector is better than Merchant and Diplomat.
Man, that is so telling for where you're going with your top ones, because I do not have... There's one that I have below those.
I begrudgingly accept your nomination here for our top 21 token rankings.
I could be swayed on Diplomat. If you want to make a barter here, which is funny for talking about Equidons, I'm willing to give you Diplomat if you're willing to put Prospector at 4.
Oh, okay. I think I'll accept that deal because, Diplomat is 1-power Equidon token. with elusive and a reap effect, each player gains one. So when Diplomat reaps, you're getting two amber, which is not nothing. But you're also giving your opponent amber, which is normally bad, but their Equidon is obviously going to steal a bunch of amber. We've got stuff that has already been revealed that at common that's significant, such as, oh, what's it called? Generous Offer. Destroy a friendly creature if you do steal two. So that could be a dead card in your hand if your opponent doesn't have amber. So that's why I like Diplomat, because it's sort of like in Shadow. So when you're playing Shadows, sometimes you're like, man, I have three urchins and a Relentless Whisper, but they have one amber. What do I do with my turn? Diplomat gives you options to burst ahead. So I do like Diplomat, but I like Prospector just a little bit more for the efficiency. So if you will accept the bargain, if you will accept that trade, I'm going to put Diplomat at 5 and Prospector at 4.
I think I'll accept that trade. It does remind me of the card Francis the Economist from Shadows.
Yep.
That it's 3 power fight, each player gains one. And I just remember, like, you would think, oh, it's in Shadows, like you want to steal in Shadows, therefore this card's probably pretty okay. But there was more often than not times where you didn't want to fight with that and try to steal one. It does come up, of course, but I will say it's a little bit more, it feels like the identity of Equidon to a T, though, of I give you this thing, but then I have ways of not really giving you that thing. So it's like a fair deal that's not. The whole idea of like you give them amber, but then steal it from them later kind of thing is very common in this house, it seems.
The difference,
it's still good. Like reap gain two, great. And the fact that, like, you know what their threshold is to forge a key, typically 6, sometimes cards can make it different, but obviously you're not going to reap with this card if that would push them over the edge and you can't pull them back. So it's not like you're going to give them a key off of this, but I don't know.
Yeah. I think the difference, obviously, with the Francis is that the Francis would still only net you one amber instead of two, but I still concede the point. I think that's fair enough. But Prospector being there, I mean, I'm just picturing a scenario where you've got a bunch of prospectors out there, and if you're able to, to drop like mass buyout another common Equidon card, play destroy each creature, each player gains amber equal to half the number of creatures they control that were destroyed this way. So, I mean, one of our common board wipes, if you've got Prospector out there, you're getting amber, you're getting cards. It just feels good. So, I like that.
Yeah, that's one. If there's tons of ways to make tokens, then I love it. I just am under the impression that, like, having more than 2 to 3 to 4 out is going to be hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, cool.
All right, we're down to we're at our top three.
I think we need to come to consensus on these top three.
Okay.
Rather than us alternate.
All right.
Because I have what I think is three, and I think you're going to disagree with me. So I'm going to ask you, what is your personal number three?
Merchant.
Okay, mine's Amberling.
You're wrong.
You're wrong.
This is great. All right. This is good radio content. You fight content.
For Merchant, I'll fight for Amberling, and then we'll figure it out.
Okay, Merchant, 1 power, action, header, steal 1, destroy Merchant. So,
yep.
Again, you got some, this is top 3, so these aren't bad. This is good. This is good amber control, steal 1. You love to see it, but then it is destroyed. It is only 1 power, so it can be wrecked pretty easily. So I think it presents a good threat, but Amberling, I guess we should probably just read the other ones, because, you know, Amberling is a 1 power Star Alliance token.
Yeah.
It cannot reap, but you may spend Amberling as if it were amber in your pool, destroy it, ignoring wards. So it's basically amber that sits there and counts toward your keys, but it can't reap. There is another card that gives it +3 power and like skirmish and crazy things. So that's cool. And then Scientist is a 1-power Mars token with Omni. We haven't seen Omni on anything else. It says reveal a Mars card from your hand and archive it. So you can use this token on any dang turn you want. And talk about efficiency. I mean, that is just, that's great. So so you've got a little bit of amber control in Merchant. You've got a little efficiency in Scientist. And then you've got some burst in Amberling. So we're kind of representing three different play styles here.
Totally. Yeah. So the reason I think I have Amberling at 3 is because it's a 1-power creature. I'm not as worried about the cannot reap effect of it, because most of these cards you're probably not going to be able to use more than one time anyway. And the fact that you can make it on, you know, a turn that's not Star Alliance, but it's a passive effect, so it doesn't have to be on a Star Alliance turn to be able to forge with it. I think that ability as like a, it can come into play, but it's just so easy to kill off that you just do it. Where I think the other ones, you might consider leaving up for a little bit longer, so they'll actually be able to do their thing more often. And I think because it can't reap, I'm knocking it more than the other two.
Yeah, I just like it that you don't have to adjust your game plan around the token. So like that's why I like Scientists too. Like once it's out, it's just there, and it's helpful every turn. Whereas Merchant is 1/3 of turns it's helpful, whereas Scientist and Amberling is helpful every turn.
Okay,
that would probably be my reasoning, my retort, if you will.
Gotcha. Man, I love seal effects. I think they're so game changing, but I'm cool to concede.
Wow, that's, I mean, that just shows your character right there, your integrity, your honor.
Also, not wanting the podcast to go 7.5 hours.
I'm taking it. All right, Merchant at number 3. All right, so then Amberling and Scientist number 1 and 2.
I'm gonna fight hard then for Amberling to be 2 and Scientist to be 1. Do you have Amberling as your top card?
I hadn't decided until this moment. I really hadn't. But based on your concession last round, I wanted to return the honor, the respect, and the gamesmanship, and just the gentlemanly way that you approach this, and I will concede the point. I will put Amberling at number 2 and Scientist at number 1.
Oh, I love it. So here's the thing. I am way more happy about this than losing out on the Amberling Merchant debate. Because I think Scientist is disgusting.
I did not anticipate us putting Scientist at number 1, so I feel like that is significant.
Again, like, you just look at it and you're just like, okay, that's pretty good. But, like, Omni cannot be understated. That, like, most Omni abilities is like, oh, heal one from a creature. You know what I mean? It's like nothing crazy. Getting to archive a card with it is just wild to me. And the fact that you're able to now thin your deck to maybe 2 houses and then, you know, come in with the huge Mars turn, potentially, if Mars ends up being great in that deck. But if Mars is the, like, a house that's, like, just not very good within that deck, you just archive it away and you're fine with that. Now, again, like, you have to draw into Mars to be able to use the Scientist. If you're using the Scientist, then you can't reap with it on the turns that you are actually using Mars, but I just think it's so good to be able to thin your deck like that, especially like literally pulling the houses apart so that just it is just one house that's just in there with all each other. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen how powerful those like big archive decks can be, and so like if you can abuse this. Like, if you have some kind of turn one, whatever, get a couple of Scientist tokens out, and your opponent's just trying to build a board, and you're just throwing all the art and the Mars stuff in your archive. You may never even touch your Mars stuff. You may just archive all your Mars stuff and play with 2 houses. for most of the game. You know, like Dave Cordero does with that five Eddie deck and Worlds Clyde Brobnar. Yeah. I knew this was good, and then this conversation has just sealed it. Like, I think Scientist is just phenomenal. And I love Mars, so give me the Scientist decks, and I'm ready to rock.
I think it's the reason it's number one for me is that it is just universally always going to be good. So many of these other cards, it's like, yeah, in theory, like, things can work out for it to be good. Like,
yeah,
if you have a dip or a prospector deck that, you know, makes tons of tokens, you get to draw a ton of, like, there's higher upside with some of the other cards for sure.
Yeah.
But I think the floor is just so high with Scientists that it's just like, to me, it's just an easy, like, you're always going to be happy to see that card in your deck.
Yeah, I do think that show. I mean, the fact that our top two are the tokens that are useful every turn, Scientist and Amberling, I think that is significant. So looking over our 21, is it, as you stare at this, are there any picks that you look at, you're like, this is suspect, I think we did this wrong, or we were confused, or whatever, that we need to change? Go ahead.
I had two in my head that I was like, you know what, I could be swayed to maybe move it up or move it down, and it's not the Bellatorn Warrior. You did convince me when I was way too harsh on it that I think it's actually probably pretty good. But the first one I'd like to talk about is Blorb. I think
at number 15 right now, yeah.
I think that is too high for Blorb. I would, like, Cultist and Priest, I maybe would switch, but, like, I'm fine with that. I think I would put Blorb either at 20 under Grunt or just above Grunt.
Hmm.
What are your
Dang it,
there?
I think you're right. The more I've thought about it, I love, you know, Let Your Memes Be Dreams and the Blorb hype and all the stuff, but I just cannot... I do think if I was opening a deck in sealed at Keyforge Celebration and I saw that I have a Mars token, I can't say definitively, but I think I want the Grunt more than I want Blorb.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, yeah, I think you're right.
It's going to be like a fine card always. Blorb is just like, ugh, that's tough.
Okay.
But you're going to get Blorb hived at Celebrations and it's going to be glorious.
All right, okay. So we're moving Blorb down to 20.
Okay.
So then all these are getting bumped up, right?
Yep.
Here, I'll start bringing this. Anything else that?
I think the other one in my head is Cleric, that I actually think is better than I gave it credit for.
Okay.
So Cleric, again, is the Sanctum card. It's a one power creature that says, after a Cleric enters play, capture one Amber. The reason I would want to push it higher is the fact that it does give Amber control to every house in your deck.
Yeah.
Assuming that each house is able to make tokens. Mm-hmm. But it does, to me, it gives more flexibility, because, like, how often do you, like, you get into games or somebody pushes to 7 and you're just like, well, dang it, I didn't get the Amber control card that I needed.
Yeah.
Like, you just have so many more options now of, like, because Cleric exists in your deck, any card that makes a token creature now is Amber control.
Or, like, little cards like, what's that, Brobnar Brawlin says, play, make 2 token creatures and enrage them.
Yeah.
I mean, all of a sudden you have a capture 2 card in Brobnar, which might be just enough to push you ahead because you can make 2. I think any card that makes multiple token creatures with Cleric is going to make it very strong.
Yeah, I mean, all those cards that was like play, capture 2, I mean, they were good. I mean, Charette as a card, which captured 3, I mean, was just insane.
Yeah.
And this is definitely not on Charette level. But, like, the capture 2 evens were, like, good cards.
Sure.
So in my head, I'm just like, you know, I think there's probably going to be more decks than not that, like, have enough token creation where you just are more flexible and it really pushes your opponent to get to, like, 9 or 10 Amber. And the beauty of, you know, all those scaling Amber effects, like, if there's the doorstep to heaven, that's, like, cool, I kept pulling you off check. You finally killed all my stuff. Well, now I'm going to doorstep you so you lose it all. Sanctum is the house that allows that captured amber, like, once they finally get it back, to like do something good with it.
Yeah.
I think I would push that higher.
So looking at this list, I'm looking at the ones ahead of Cleric, and I do agree. I think Cleric needs to be higher. I might push it all the way up to like 8 or 9.
I was thinking 9. I think behind Bellatorn Warrior is kind of where I liked it.
Okay.
Because I think Bellatorian is kind of like that next level of like just cool cards, where all of these are really close, but I just think the cleric has probably a little bit more upside.
Yeah. I love it. So Cleric at
Cool.
number 9 popped the top 10. Oh, I need to remember what I'm doing here. I don't want to accidentally delete something. All right. So then Rebel goes to 11, Goblin goes to 12, Politician goes to number 13. Okay. All right.
And with that, I think we did it.
I think I'm good with this. I might switch Grunt with Knight 18 and 19, but I don't think it's important enough to make a big deal about it. I think that having three power is more important than having two power, one armor, but
Okay. Yeah. It's like so minuscule different though that I'm
I'll just
just
leave it. So,
however you want to do it, so
all right, so rehashing our list for all of our audio listeners, at number 21, we have Disciple. Get out of here, Disciple, and you and your monks. At number 20, we've got Blorb. Pour one out for our little buddy. But
Chocolate.
prove us wrong. I would love to be proved wrong. Number 19, we've got Grunt. Number 18, we've got Knight. Number 17, we have Priest. Number 16, we have Cultist. So again, unfathomable. We got two more tokens to be revealed. Please let them be better than these guys. Please, I want Unfathomable to be so good. Number 15, we have Cadet. Number 14, we have Squire. 13 is Politician. 12 is Goblin. 11 is Rebel. And then in our top 10, we've got number 10, Explorer. Number 9 is Cleric. Number 8 is Bellatorn Warrior. Number 7, Strange Shell. Number 6, Berserker. Number 5 is Diplomat. Number 4 is Prospector. Number 3 is Merchant. Number 2 is Amberling. And our number 1, way too early guess at the best token of the 21 we have available right now is the Scientist, everybody.
Scientists.
Woo! We did it.
I love it.
We did it. That was
I
fun.
think, yeah, I think it's objectively correct.
So we're gonna have we're gonna save this list, and in a I don't know, whenever after the set drops, we have some time with it, we're gonna come back to it and see if we agree with our way too early predictions for top tokens. And I cannot wait to see the other seven tokens. I need to see the tokens, and it might not be until like literally Keyforge Celebration, people are opening decks and they reveal the tokens, which is super exciting to me.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. It definitely gets me more excited for the set again, and like, thinking through like, man, when's the set gonna come out? Like, maybe not dropping for more months, but we actually have an event. We're gonna see the cards. There's gonna be decks out there. So it's fun that we get to see real Keyforge again, as far as like new exciting Keyforge. So
Yeah, and
I'm pumped.
Tabletop Royale is going to be streaming everything and recording things. I'm going to be there. I probably won't be streaming, but I'm going to record as much as I can. I'm probably going to record opening my first Winds of Exchange decks, my Unchained decks. I'll be posting those right onto YouTube. I'm going to be doing some interviews and posting those probably daily, honestly, just to keep everyone kind of in the know. But I'm very excited, and I cannot wait to get my hands on these new cards.
I love it. Oh, that'll be so fun.
Yep.
Sweet.
Okay. Well, we have gone long. I'm making the executive decision. No King Potato this week. I'm sorry. You're gonna get wrong anyway, so why bother?
Yeah, why bother?
But we'll get back to it next time. Any final thoughts before we say goodbye?
Any final thoughts? Yeah. Blorb is going to be the hottest new creature in Keyforge, and I can't wait for it.
Get your scientists. You heard it here first, guys. Get your science textbooks out. Be studying up. You know.
Go chemistry.
Science is important, I guess. All right, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Wild Wormhole. And make sure you never listen to Call of Discovery. And we'll see you in the next one. Bye, guys.
Bye, y'all.